Enjoy two reality-based fiction novels, Reality Check Stepmother Chronicles and Love Conquers All. Relax, relate, and release with author Angelon Edwards as she shares stories of complicated familial relationship dynamics. Embrace the insight of stepmom Carmen Fuller with her eye-opening experiences in the novel, Reality Check Stepmother Chronicles, and get connected with the drama-filled lives of Adrian and Essence in the novel Love Conquers All. Both novels are available online in paperback and ebook at xlibris.com, amazon.com, and bn.com. Check out her website at www.stepmother-chronicles.com and www.loveae.net for excerpts.
Good morning and welcome to a Author's First radio special. I'm your host, Richie K, here in Studio A, and today my guest is Angelica Harris. Angelica Harris is a successful author, entrepreneur, advocate, and speaker, and her journey to disempower her rage began in 2010 with the writing of her memoir, Living with Rage. She's also the author of the Excalibur series, three other books, which are awesome. So we're going to talk to Angelica Harris today. And here she is. Angelica, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Can you hear me?
I can kind of hear you. Are you on speakerphone?
Yes, I am. I will get my headset on right now. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
1 second. I was hoping we could do it on speaker, but I guess not. Okay.
That's much better.
All right, how are you?
Great. How are you today?
I'm good. Excuse me, frog in the throat.
Well, welcome to the Artist First Radio Network. We're going to talk all about you and your books today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me and to all our listeners out there. Thank you for listening in. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, it's lovely to have you. I want to tell all our listeners to go ahead and check out angelicaharris.com. That's A-N-G-E-L-I-C-A, harris.com. And you can see on her page, she's got blogs. She's got several books that she's written. And while we're talking, you could get to know a little more about her there. And also, the books that she has written have all got nice synopsis of them, and you can buy them right off that page too, angelicaharris.com/books, and you can find her 4 books there. But let's go ahead and get to know you a little bit. Angelica, can you tell us a little bit about your formative years, and were you always planning to be a writer?
Actually, it's funny you start off with this question, because my history teacher, Mr. George Chehalis at William Cullen Bryant High School, a great man, one day started reading a lot of my essays in history. And obviously, since I write about King Arthur, I am a history buff and a King Arthur historian. And one day, Mr. Chehalis was reading an essay of mine and about King Arthur, and he just looked at me and said, "You're phenomenal." And he said, I was about to give you a B on this test, but I had to give you an A. And I noticed that on the first 2 pages, I had a couple of wrong answers. And I said, "But you can't give me an A if I have a wrong answer." And he said to me, "No, I just discovered something. You're a storyteller. You remember history in story form and in order. You don't remember it if someone is asking you, you know, just random questions." And it was the truth, because I would take the test and, you know, he would ask the questions such as, when did Columbus, you know, discover America? And, of course, the answer is 1492. But when he would ask the questions, when he would ask for an essay, I mean, maybe I would have gotten it wrong. So I would have said 1491 or 1497 or something like that. But in the essay, at the end of the test, I remembered it in story form, and I got everything right. All the questions that I got wrong on the first two pages, which may have been two or three, I got right in my essay form. And he started noticing more and more how my book reports or history reports were going, and my teachers were the same way. They all noticed that my reports weren't just reports. There were more books in, and I had opinions, and I brought out the point of view of the author and the point of view of whoever I was talking about in history. And then I had my opinions at the end of the story, or the end of the report. And one day, Mr. Jehalis gave me a task, or shall I say, an extra credit report. He said, what I want you to do is do this. I noticed that you love King Arthur. I want you to take these two books. One is La Morte d'Arthur by Thomas Malory, and the other one was The Once and Future King by T.H. White. I want you to read both books, and I know you can do it because you love to read. I want you to give me an assessment of the author's knowledge of Arthur, and then I want your opinion at the end of it. I said, okay. So I ran to the library, picked out the books, started reading them, I mean literally ingesting them, and started my report and handed it in at the end of the year. And he turned around and said to me, you will definitely end up writing books one day. And I looked at Mr. Jehalis and I said, yeah, right. I mean, I was 17, you know. I was just writing poetry. I had started writing poetry because of, we'll dive into this later, but because of the abusive relationship I had with my mom, I was already starting to write poetry in a notebook in my home, but writing books about King Arthur or history or anything like that, ludicrous. Me? You know, I'm 17 years old. You're telling me I'm going to write a book? Well, lo and behold, you know, here it was many years later in 1997. I saw the movie Merlin with Sam Neill and Isabella Rossellini on the, I believe it was an HBO television show. And at the end of the movie, Merlin says to Nimue, when he turns back the clock and makes them beautiful and from, they went from being old to beautiful and young again. He says, there is no more magic. And it was as though I said to Merlin, there can't be any more magic. And I started diving into my Excalibur reading, that's my program, excuse me, my Excalibur books, and started reading everything King Arthur that I could remember from high school. And I started reading my Alfred Lord Tennyson and my Chaucer and T.H. White again and Mallory and Jean Markell. And I started ingesting the masters all over again. And before you know it, my Ariana Lawrence, my character, was born. And so was my series. And I sat down and I said, well, I'll be darned. Mr. Jehalis said I was going to write a book when I was someday. And guess what? He was right. He knew me more than I knew myself. So, you know, you never know what kind of a teacher you have in your life, where they just influence you in ways that you have no idea. And I was blessed, very blessed in high school to have my Mr. Chalice, my history teacher, and Mrs. Lila Clausman, who was my theater teacher and my literature teacher, who just inspired me and ignited me with the love of, you know, writing and theater and acting and literature. And these were the teachers who helped feed me at a time when I was going through a lot at home that I was keeping secret. And it all started when I was about 8 or 9, when my mom started a descent in mental illness, and she started beating me at home when I get in trouble at school. And it was, and then I was taking care of my ailing grandmother, and I was sent to do an adult job. And my uncle, who was living with my grandmother at the time, he was about, I'd say, 30 years old, and I was 11, and he started molesting me in my grandmother's house and in his car taking me home from helping my grandmother. And if that wasn't, you know, issues going on at home, my mother ignited enough mistrust, or he destroyed a lot of mistrust and a lot of trust in with that I have with my parents, especially my mom. And he started lying that I was doing things at my grandmother's house that I wasn't doing, you know. Hey, Virginia, I mean, my mother's name was Virginia. Ange didn't, you know, go and get the milk for mom. So we had to backtrack and get it before I brought her home. And it was all lies. He was molesting me. And my mother always took the side of the adult. You know, you're the child. You're supposed to do what you're told. And, you know, I come from a time when, you know, corporal punishment and beating a child was okay to a point. Not when you're leaving marks on a child, but what I'm saying is, you know, corporal punishment was okay during the 60s and 70s, and but it got to a point where it wasn't just corporal punishment anymore. It was my mother was literally taking my father's belt and beating me to a point where there were marks, you know, deep marks and deep welts that I was covering up with clothes and anything I could. But then her mental illness started to even get worse by the time I was, I'd say, 15, 16 years old. And I attribute it to a very violent change in her life. You know, all women, by the time we reach our 40s and 50s, we go through our menstrual changes, and hers were violent. But, you know, in those days, oh, it's just a violent day, or it's just a mood swing, or she's just aggravated, or she's having one of those days. She's, you know, sitting in the corner crying, and let her be. But that's not the point. You know, we didn't know enough that it was triggering off what I know now as borderline personality disorder. And when my mother was in her moods, you don't say no to her. When you don't come in at 5 minutes late from school or from work or from playing with your friends and you ask her where you were and you tell her the truth, and she'll look at you and she'll say you're lying. And from lying, it's, but I want lying to you. And from there, it's, you don't love me. You don't care about me. Why are you lying to me? And then there's the crying, and then this one particular day, she got so mad at me. She got mad at me. She was in her swings, and she pulled out a knife from the drawer, and she wanted to kill herself and me on that day. And it was right after that that I started writing my poetry in my little red notebook, hence the red cover on my book. We took that from my first cover, my first book that I ever started writing in, and it really wasn't even a book, it was just poetry. And I would write poetry that I am horrendous. I would search, I searched my soul feeling that I was a horrendous woman. I was a horrendous child. I wasn't worth living.
Right.
And it was difficult. It was very difficult for me to be able to you know, look at myself in the mirror after a while and realize that I was worth something.
Well, and it's so, you know, astonishing, really, that, you know, having those experiences and painful experiences, that you still were able to make an impact in school in such a way, you know, that a teacher noticed, you know, your talent and was able to nurture that in a sense. And you know, through all that, you had a real strength, and I think through your writing we're able to find solace, as you say in the title of your book.
Yes, it took a long time. I mean, in all honesty, the solace has only started in the past couple of years. And that has only been through being able to start talking about the journey that I went through, and being able to look at the issues in the eye and saying through, especially through therapy. I mean, I was drawn into therapy years and years later when my son, John, who is now a 23-year-old man, was diagnosed with ADHD and Tourette syndrome. And I would sit in the social worker's chair working with his issues. And there were days when I was sitting there and I couldn't deal with his issues. And I can't remember the pinnacle words I used one day with his social worker. But she looked at me and she said, "Were you abused when you were a child?" And as I said, if I go back and sit in the chair and think to myself, what words did I use? Because I was using so many words to convey what my needs for my son. I don't remember the words that I said to her, but somewhere along the sentences that I was sharing with her, she heard something of abuse in my own life. And she asked me the question, and I sat there and I looked at Emily, who had these kind eyes looking at me, and it was the first time, except for when I wrote my first book, that I revealed to her I was. And the tears just started to come down, and it was the first time in my life that I had ever said to anyone, especially eye to eye, that something horrible and desperate happened to me. And she, at that time, just set my son out of the room and had him go play, you know, in the play area for the kids. And she looked at me and she said, "What happened?" And I looked at Emily and I, to be blatantly honest, I just shut down. I said, "I can't talk about this. You know, I can't talk about this. It's, you know, it's been a secret all my life and I can't." But
this was the first time anyone had ever, you had ever told
right.
anyone.
And it was, I mean, mind you, it had to be at least 30 years later.
Wow.
And sitting in Emily's chair, I just looked at her and she grabbed my hand and she said, "Whatever happened to you, there is no one in this room that is judging you. Know that you are here because your son needs you. And the only way I'm going to be able to help you with your son is if you could help you with you." So,
how did that feel?
And I just looked at her, "Help me with me. I'm the caregiver. Nobody helps me with me." I'm the one who at between the ages of 11 and 13 helped my grandmother and helped my mother at the same time, who was suffering horribly with her periods and nearly bleeding to death. I'm the one who takes care of everyone. No one takes care of me. I'm the one who takes care of my mom and does all the housework and goes to school and works. And I'm the one who takes care of everyone. I'm the one who takes care of a husband who almost died and a son who is very sick. And I'm the one who takes care of everybody. Who takes care of me? I don't know how to get on that side of the fence. I did not know that time how to get on that side of the fence. I was the consummate caregiver, the mom, the person who held everything that happened to me inside of me. Now, how do I say this? How do I begin? How do I say to you, this is what happened to me in my life? What words do I start with? And she just held my hand and she said to me, "Look into my eyes. Know that I am not judging you. I am not the person who ever assaulted you or abused you or belittled you. Whatever happened in your life, I am not that person. Whatever happened in your life is not your fault. Can you tell me just a little of what happened?" And I just looked at her, and everything in my persona was shaking, wanting to explode everything that happened to me, but so afraid of my mother coming after me with my father's belt or with a wooden spoon. Afraid of my assailant who raped me when I was 20. I was afraid at that point. I mean, everything had happened, and afraid of my assailant stalking me again. And, you know, I was always the type of person who, as Mildred Muhammad, the prolific author of Scared Silent, said, you live under the radar, and that's exactly how I lived. I lived mostly under the radar of everything. And now you're telling me to come above the radar and talk? Can I do that? And I looked in the room, and there was nobody there but this kind lady and a hand holding me, and I just looked in Emily's eyes and I said, my mother hit me so badly that I don't know how to be the right mother for my son right now, and he is reminding me of my mom, and I don't know how to do this. I am afraid of everything in my life right now, and I am mostly afraid of my son not growing up normal. And I'm just afraid. I'm just afraid of everything. And she said, don't be afraid anymore. You're here. And I'm here to help you and your son. Now let's take this journey together. If I tell you that day, I held her hands, I broke down for the first time in 30 years. I let the pain out. And all I needed was a kind hand and a warm heart and two warm eyes looking at me saying, you're okay now, you're here. You're here with me, nothing is going to happen to you. And from then on, it was my healing. I was able to go and talk to Emily about my son and what was going on with him in school and his misbehaviors. And he had oppositional defiance disorder. His ranges, everything that I was going through with my son, there were times when I saw a lot of that happening with my mom. And why is a split picture in my head, and why can't I get through that? And Emily was there to help me get through it, to help me split the screen and realize that when my son was raging, it was my son and not my mother, and I didn't have to be afraid of my son because I am his mother, and I am here now. I am no longer the child. I am the adult. And if I want the pattern to break, I had to break the pattern myself, and I had to break the pattern in my mind. Not that I became an abusive parent, but I had to break that pattern in my mind where if my son was hurting or my son was raging because of his Tourette syndrome, because of the ADHD, because of the ODD, I had to break that pattern in my mind and say, this is John, your loving son. Your beautiful boy.
Hello. I think we may have lost Angelica there. Hang on just a second, and we'll be right back. In the meantime, let's listen to some music. Enjoy An Eye for Awilda.
Thank you. time, I don't know. Well, maybe I'm in love. Thinking about it every time I think about it. Can't stop thinking about it. How much longer will it take to cure this? Just to cure it, cause I can't ignore it if it's love. Makes me want to turn around and face me, but I don't know nothing about love. Come on, come on, turn a little faster. Come on, come on, the world will follow after. Come on, come on, everybody's after love. So I said I'm a snowball running, running down into the spring that's coming. All this love melting under blue skies, belting out sunlight shimmering love. Strawberry ice cream, never ever end of all this love. Well, I didn't mean to do it, but there's no escaping your love. These lines of lightning mean we're never alone, never alone, no, no. Come on, come on, move a little closer. Come on, come on, I wanna hear you whisper. Come on, come on, settle down inside my love. Come on, come on.
Welcome back to Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network. We do have Angelica Harris back on the line with us now. How are you, Angelica?
I'm back.
Welcome back, and thank you. Sorry about the technical difficulty there, folks, but we do have Angelica back on the line. And you were telling us a little bit about the therapy that you had gone through and trying to not pass on the negative experiences you had growing up to your child.
Yes. I have, besides my son John, I have an older daughter. Her name is Andrea, and she's 26 now. And I can't say that I didn't yell at my kids when they did something wrong. And there were times when, in the beginning, because I did, you know, give them a swat on the behind for touching, you know, trying to touch the stove or trying to run out in the street. But as I got older and I saw myself as a teenager with both of them, I mean, once they started reaching their teenage years, that's when everything, see, that's what happens when you're an abused child. At the age when it happens, when you see your children hit that age, that's when you're flooded with the memories. And that's what I learned in therapy.
Can you tell our listeners just the title of your book and when you started to decide that you were going to write a book about this? We went a lot into detail about the moment when you first realized that you could actually share the information with another human being. But now you're actually sharing it with the whole world. So how did that process kind of come about for you? And also, can you remind our listeners the name of the books and where they can find them again?
The title of the book is Living with Rage, A Quest for Solace. You could find it on Amazon.com. I just found out that it's ready to order right off the shelves of Amazon. It will be on the shelves of Barnes & Noble as of December 16th, our release date. So I'm... you could find me at www.angelicaharris.com or on Facebook and Twitter. But and that'll direct you to you know, purchasing a copy, and I'm thrilled about that. But the pinnacle moments came when that I decided that I wanted to write this book was in all three of my Excalibur books. I wrote a lot through my character Ariana Lawrence. I wrote a lot of the social issues that I went through as a child. And in my first book in particular, when Ariana goes back in time to meet Arthur, Merlin shows Arthur who Ariana is. And at that moment, it was, we are in the scene where she is with the Lady of the Lake. And he's taking the water from the lake and throwing it up in the air, and tapestries of Ariana's life are there. Ariana dealing with her son, Ariana taking care of her husband, Ariana being abused by her mom, and then there was that scene I wanted to write where I was raped when I was 20. And honestly, I walked away from that chapter, I think, 3 and 4 times, and until finally the words kept running in my head and running, and I said, I kept thinking to myself, I don't remember. I don't want to remember. And that's exactly what I brought myself back to writing as I sat down and wrote, I don't want to remember, telling Merlin, please, please, don't show this. I don't want to remember. And that's when it was a pinnacle moment when I revealed that I was raped at 20.
And did you always know that Ariana was you?
Actually, from the day that I started writing her, I knew she was me. She was me finding Excalibur, the sword, me finding the magic again that had left my life. And the sword brought her back to a time where, I mean, going back to writing stories about King Arthur, that was a time when I was in love in college. That was my passion. That was me sitting in a classroom with Ms. Halas or Mrs. Clausman, at a time when I felt safe away from my mom. Even though I do have to bring out, my mom did so much work at my high school in the PTA and volunteering. She ended up working in my school as a secretary because they were in need of a secretary, and the secretary needed an assistant and loved my mother's skills so much that she hired her, and I hated it because here is my abuser now in my high school, and what kid wants their mom in their high school? But
wow.
as soon as I walked into Mr. Chehalis' room, Mrs. Clausman's room, Mrs. Wolf's room, my English teacher's classroom, I felt safe because they were taking me in at a time in history. So I'm backtracking. They were taking me to a time in history where, or in English, through Shakespeare or through the poetry of Shakespeare, Edgar Allan Poe, where I felt safe. That's how I started writing, because the inspiration I learned through the writings of Shakespeare and Mallory and Edgar Allan Poe started me writing in my little red notebook down the basement when I was alone. And I'd hide the notebook under the steps in my basement because I didn't want my mother to read the poems that I was writing. And I could read for you right now my first poem, and it's a short one, but it was right after I had a major fight with my mother, and it was one of the first times as a teenager where she just grabbed a hold of my father's belt and struck it on my back a few times where I could feel the pain surge right into my chest. And as I was sitting in my English teacher's classroom, I wrote, what's wrong with me? Am I so hideous no one will look at me? I am horrendous. Why am I slighted, pushed aside, cast away like a rag? I am horrendous. Who will look at me? I am.
You're breaking up again there, Angelica.
Here.
Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. We lost you for a second there, but I think you're still there.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. So I that was one of the first poems I ever wrote in my red notebook, and it was hard, but you know.
Well, it's so common. I mean, I don't mean to say you're a common person, but that it is a common experience to be when those who are abused, you know, they think that their parents are right, that there's a reason that they're being abused, that, you know, that there's something wrong with them. And I think that was pretty obvious in your writings there, that you were feeling that way. So,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting. There are so many interesting things that you've talked about throughout this. I mean, from the point when your teachers first, you know, inspired you to open your mind, and the whole aspect that storytelling was the kind of way for you to process details and information in the best way, and just learning that that was how your brain worked best. It's kind of an interesting topic that you could delve into sort of even just right there. And then there's just the whole aspect of, you know, the Excalibur as kind of a that series being a sort of eye-opening quest for you as well, an inward journey in a sense to get to your own holy grail or, you know, essence. And then through that process, eventually coming to a point where you confronted your childhood pain and then wrote this book, Living with Rage. So I think it's a fascinating, you know, life, and just to see the process there at work has been really really rewarding. And I thank you for sharing so openly with us, Angelica.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me to share it. But you know, you had asked me before when I started, when was the pinnacle point that I decided to write this story, and two things brought it out. One was after my readers were reading Ariana's tale, and they started asking me questions about, did this really happen to you? And I would stand there and say, what really happened to you? And I remember my girlfriend, Becky, just looked at me one day and said, you know, I've grown to know you for a while now, but this rape thing that you wrote about in the book, did it happen to you? Were you raped when you were a kid or when you were younger? And I just looked at her, and I said, why do you want to know? And she said, because it seems so real, and the way you're wording it just seems so much more like you than your own character. And I just looked at her, and I said, yes. I said, it was me. I was raped at 20. And she said, I knew it. And what was starting to happen is, as my books were unfolding in front of my readers' eyes, I was getting more and more questions about the issues that I was bringing out with Ariana. And my publisher, Corey Blake of Roundtable Companies, who published my third book, Excalibur Reclaims Her King, he was starting to get emails from my readers asking, were these issues, are these true to, you know, Angelica and not Ariana? And before you knew it, he hooked me up with my manager right now, who is Jennifer Geronimo, and I was getting booked for speaking engagements and book signings, and the people who had read my books had started asking me questions more about Ariana, and I mean more about me than Ariana, and before you know it, I started talking about my abuse and what happened and living with a child with special needs and how King Arthur just keeps spiking and igniting me to write. And and my publisher had said to me one day, I'll never forget, Corey said, you need to start writing, thinking about your memoir, because many people are interested in your life, your true life, not Ariana. And honestly, I just sat on the phone one day and I said to Corey, you've got to be kidding. I mean, I write my memoir, write my life. I don't know if I could do that. And then he said to me, I bet you can. He said, you're starting to write blogs about it, and people are reading them and enjoying them. And I said, yeah, and they're commenting on them on Facebook, and they're commenting on your website, and they're actually calling you to book you for, I mean, I was booked for the Amnesty International Human Rights Festival, and it was all about domestic violence and sexual assault. And then I was getting noticed by IVAT, the Institute for Violence, Abuse, and Trauma, against violence, abuse, and trauma. And some domestic violence groups were starting to confront me about my life and about my writings. And Corey hooked me up with my editor, Katie Gutierrez Painter, for this book. And we started with a simple treatment of going back in my life. And before you knew it, the treatment and the outline turned into Living with Rage, A Quest for Solace. And here it is now. And I'm very proud of my work and proud of this book. I'm proud of the voice it has given me.
Well, and now I think, you know, with the Amnesty International and everything else, I mean, it's sort of a way to, you know, help people, I think, maybe even in a way that fiction never could.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's what the human rights festivals are created for, and that's what IVAT is created for. It's not only where, you know, it's not just a conference, but artists are invited to come and talk about what they've been through. This year, this past September, I was a presenter at IVAT, and after I made my presentation, I was honored to be asked to be on their planning committee for the conference that's coming up this September. And not only will I be a presenter, but they're gating me to be one of the speakers, and I will also be performing some of my poetry at the event. And there will be a major book signing for me. So I'm in a way, it's kind of surreal yet for me, because I was not prepared to have my life so received in this kind, beautiful way after living with so much abuse in my life. I never realized that my life could be so nurturing to someone and could be so inspiring to someone. You don't realize it until you start writing it on the page, or when you look at someone or you talk to an abused child who says, I read your poetry and you inspired me. You let me realize that there is someone out there who was just like me. Or you get involved in your community. I'm a proud member of my Glendale Kiwanis Club, and I'm slated for president in 2 years. And through there, I met a wonderful woman. Her name is Sister Tisa, who is the director of a group called Our Children, and it's H-O-U-R. And these children have, many of their parents are incarcerated. About the issue. Hello?
Hello? Sorry, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That was my boss. I think he was picking up the phone on the inside. You can thank Z-Man for that.
That's okay. Technical difficulties. Look at that today.
Yeah.
But anyway, these children have many of their parents are incarcerated over the issues, no matter what they are. And some of their mothers are getting ready within the year or two to be released from prison. Some of them are in the Taconic Minimal Security Prison here in Bedford, New York. And it is my honor that I was asked by Sister Tisa to start doing mentoring talks in the prison. So as of January 3rd, I will be going there once a month to mentor and start working with these ladies.
These are the actual abusers.
Well, right. They are the abusers, or women who were abused who ended up
abusing
in
their
jail.
Children as well.
Or either that, or selling drugs because they were abused by their husbands and they didn't know any way out to feed their children but selling drugs or selling weapons or robbery or anything else, whatever the case was. they didn't know that there was another way out for them, and right. they ended up turning to crime. So as of January 3rd, I'll be at the prison reading to them, speaking with them, and working on writing workshops to help them find their way out of the system and back into the workforce when they get out, whenever their time is up.
I think that's just wonderful. That is really good.
It is. It is because, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting about three of them at Our Children who did their time and came out, and through Sister Tisa and her wonderful staff, were able to get out of the system and now find work. And I mean, this home for children, it's beautiful. And if you go, if anyone who is listening, please, you should go on their website, www.ourchildren.org, and that's H-O-U-R, children.org. And if you have clothes for women and children, donate them. Jewelry, you know, costume jewelry that you're tired of wearing, send it to them, because these women could use nice clothes and nice costume jewelry, or decent costume jewelry. Shoes, the children could use clothes and such to, first of all, the clothes to help their mothers to wear on job interviews, or clothes to help their mothers feel great about themselves coming out of the system and know that, you know, I did what I did to survive for my child. Now I need to be able to conquer what I've been through, as I have conquered through my writing and through speaking as I am today. But now I need to conquer it. Now I need to know that I found a place that will help me get out of it. Now I need to go forth and live a normal life again. And that is what I'm becoming a part of, and that is exactly what my book is all about. Since my writings and what I have done has helped me find my true voice, then it is my task now that God has put, I feel, and because I'm a very spiritual person, I feel that God gave me this gift. And through this gift, he has kept me out of harm's way in many ways where I didn't become someone who ended up in jail. So now, with this gift, I have to pay it forward. I have to go out and bring this gift forward to others and say, this is what God has given me. This is the plan, his plans to me. So now, let me bring it forth. Let me bring it to you. And let me help you the way I got help through my therapist and through my community groups and through my church and through the love of my family and the love of my wonderful friends, and right now my excellent and wonderful publishing team. I don't know what I would go, what I would do without Roundtable Companies and Corey Blake and Katie and Erin and Mary and Chris and everyone else at the team. I really don't know what I would do without them at this point. And what I wouldn't do without people like you who are interested in my work and who want to let the public know what I'm doing. I mean, thank you so much for having me here today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. And what an inspiration you are. And gosh, I just wish I was Oprah right now. And I was just like, I'll match, you know, with my $1 million, every dollar that you donate to this nonprofit right now, because I think that would be, you know, just amazing. This really needs, I could see, you know, you up there with Oprah right now.
You know,
and bringing some great, knowledge to this, and spreading the message of healing that you have here.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was last Thursday. I had a media tour here in my great state of New York, and I was supposed to be interviewed by O Magazine that day, and unfortunately, the interviewer or the reporter who was going to do the interview was sent on a, I'm not saying that I am less important, but she was sent on a more important interview that was happening. I do not know what the interview was, but they told me it had to do with some kind of crisis that was going on and at that very moment, and the magazine wanted a story about it. So They are planning on an interview either by phone conference with my publisher, or they're going to get me in, you know, at the office here in New York. So
yeah, I mean, it just seems like perfect and exactly what I think she's always going for, too. She's always trying to, you know, help and do things in a humanitarian way. So I think, you know, the nonprofit organization you were talking about there that you're working with, and just the whole message of your book and you and everything, it could make a really great episode of Oprah, and could really, I think, help that organization to continue their good work.
Yes, and I like to also say to everyone, I myself own an organization. It's called the Excalibur Reading Program. And my reading program, what I do is I work with children who, especially special needs children who were like my son. I help them with literacy, writing, through the arts. I also work with some abused children and help mentoring them. And I'm also with the SSP right now, the Student Sponsorship Program with the Diocesan in Brooklyn, and I'm working with a beautiful young lady right now who's... I just enjoy my work so very much.
What's the name of that organization, and how can our listeners, you know, donate? And
well, if anyone wants to donate to my organization, the Excalibur Reading Program, if you go on my website www.angelicaharris.com, there is a donate button on my website. You could donate to my program, and that would help me greatly working with children who have special needs and who are abused, you know, with literacy and with the arts and such. I love working with my children and teaching them through writing and through the arts that they could get any, they could, you know, they could be dreamers through writing and arts and do whatever they wish in this world if they have a dream.
I think, like, just like your life, the, you know, arts have been that kind of quest to find yourself and heal, and it could be that for so many people, and I think that's your life is one proof of that. And thank you again, Angelica. Is there any just last words that you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Yes. If any of you out there are hearing what I'm saying and it's happening to you, don't be afraid. Shatter your silence. Go anywhere. If it's the police department, to your clergy, to a teacher, to your best friend. Talk to someone you trust and say to them, this is happening to me. I need help. Don't be afraid. Someone is out there to help you. If you want to contact me about anything, you can contact me at angelica@angelicaharris.com. I will take your email. We could, you know, correspond back and forth. If you get my book, please go get my book, Living with Rage, A Quest for Solace. In the back of my book, I have a full resource page of where to go. I have the hotline for domestic violence. I have the New York Coalition and the International Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Amnesty International, IVAT. Call any of those numbers. Get to their website. Go to your assemblyman, your senator, whoever is in your neighborhood. Go and talk and say, this is what's happening to me, or I know someone this is happening to.
Angelica, thank you so much for joining us today. We're just out of time. But thank you so much for coming on today. And please come back again to the Artist First Radio Network.
I will. Thank you so much for... making me part of your day today. It was an honor and a privilege. And everyone, this is Angelica Harris, and my book is Living with Rage, A Quest for Solace. You can find it on Amazon.com. And thank you again.
Thank you. Have a good day, Angelica.
You too.